How do people stay positive in a world that really is pretty darn negative?
Yeah, you're right. And the more we learn about it, the more negative it becomes. I think positive thinking is a skill, and that anybody can learn it. But it, you know, anytime you try to change your mind, change the circuitry in your brain, it's a lot of work. I mean, it's a lot of work. And so you just can't say, gee, I'm going to think positive, and that's the end of it. I mean, you have to, you know, get the best books and go through the exercises and stick with it. Because the problem with any self-help book, as most psychologists will tell you, is that they work for 2 or 3 weeks or maybe 2 months, and then you forget about what the lessons were. But you've got to write it down. You've got to put it on your refrigerator. You've got to put it where it's always visible so that the discipline is there. And positive thinking is definitely a discipline, because the world will bring you down if you don't stay positive.
But that's not easy.
It's not easy. It's a hard work. It's like learning to play the piano or learning some physical skill. It's very hard. It's like getting over a phobia. I mean, it's very difficult to do that. And so you have to really work at it.
I mean,
there's no easy answers.
People who get sick, you know, you're supposed to stay positive. You're supposed to allow your body to fight off a lot of these illnesses.
Right.
But that's still, it's still difficult. How does a person, for example, who's got cancer, how do they stay positive in order to battle something like that?
I don't know. I noticed with this woman, Christopher Reeve's wife, just passed away, and she was positive
sad
to the end.
Sad story. 44
yeah.
years old.
Right.
And she didn't smoke.
To the end.
Yes. She didn't smoke, and she dies of lung cancer.
Yeah. Go figure that. Go figure the vagaries of life. You know, it's basically a lottery. But you know, some people have a natural propensity to positive thinking. As a matter of fact, it's interesting. There's a whole other body of academic study that people don't know about, and that's the brain's reward punishment system, the pleasure unpleasure system, they call it. And there's a doctor that I quote in the book. I can't remember his name, who claims that we all have a pleasure threshold. A number one on the pleasure threshold would be somebody who's sort of pessimistic most of the time, you know, down and out. And the higher you're up on that scale to a number 9 or 10, again, using a scale of 1 or 10, the more optimistic and up you are, it's hard to get you down. And he points out that the people that are high on this pleasure threshold don't need alcohol, don't need cocaine and drugs to get their high.
Right.
Every day is a high for them.
They're high on life.
Right. And so we all have some pleasure threshold. And it's very difficult to get up. You know, in other words, if you're low on that scale and you want to rise up, you've got to work real hard and practice this kind of positive thought and use the disciplines that the experts in the field talk about.
Well, you know, there are those people who are on that bottom of the chain. We call them vampires, energy vampires.
Yes, that's right. That's right. People like that can walk into a room and suck the energy right out of it.
And you can feel it.
You can feel it. I try my darndest to stay away from people like that, because I don't need the downer. You know, it's hard enough to stay up. So I always say avoid people like that.
Give us a couple stories or examples of some of the things we've talked about tonight where you've either come across or stories that people have shared with you that would, you know, cite some of these things.
Well, I had a close friend that had a serious disease, and you would never know it. You would never know it. Never complained, never explained. Always positive. Always had a positive outlook. Actually recovered. And I've seen people that, you know, were terminal, that were positive to the very end. On the other hand, I've seen people who, you know, went through it and was moaning and groaning and made all of us feel bad. So there is this natural propensity to be one thing or the other, and it's very difficult. You know, when I wrote Power Freaks, I was trying to figure out a way to what are the solutions? People say, what are the solutions to dealing with a power freak? And the ultimate solution, I called, was calculated avoidance. And I don't know if you remember the play of the movie Mr. Roberts, where...
I remember it, yeah.
Yeah, where Jack Lemmon played the part of Ensign Pulver, who was on the ship, and the captain, who played by James Cagney, they came across each other on the deck one day, and he says, "Who are you?" And he says, "I'm Ensign Pulver." He says, "Well, how long have you been on board?" He says, 14 months. And this was a small ship. And I thought That was a and this captain was a jerk, you know. I mean, that was his character. And I thought that was a great example of calculated avoidance, of staying away from people that are going to annoy you.
There was an ex-football player, must have been about 6'4", big burly guy, and he went into sales after his football career.
Yeah.
And one of his accounts happened to be a major corporation.
Uh-huh.
And he would come in every month to try to sell his goods, whatever he was dealing with,
right,
to this major corporation. And the buyer happened to be a guy who was about 5'5".
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, David, he would come in every month,
yeah,
and every month he'd walk out with no sale. And it just frustrated the heck out of him.
Yeah.
And one day, he went to a friend of his, and he says, you know what? I've been positive about my business and what I do. I just can't break through on this. This is starting to really get me down. It's,
yeah,
my biggest. It has the potential of being my biggest account,
right,
and I can't sell to this guy, and I can't go over his head. And his buddy says, "Look, you need to analyze what the situation is. You're 6 foot four. You're six. You know, you're a monster of a person. You're,
yeah,
imposing wherever,
right,
you go.
Right.
You've got this guy who's 5'5",
yeah,
and you walk into his office,
yeah,
you know, like a big ape.
Yeah.
And he said you're scaring the guy. You're a monster. And he said, this is what we're going to do with you next time. You're going to walk in with these glasses. You're going to have your briefcase already open, but you're going to have your hands around it, because what you're going to do is the moment you walk in his office, you're going to trip, and the briefcase is going to go flying, your glasses are going to go, and you're going to fall right on your face. And he said, I want you to do that when you walk into his door.
Yeah.
Because most of the time, he's not even looking up at you, is he? And he,
right,
said, no, you're right.
Yeah.
So he comes in, and he does a phony flip. And, man, the briefcase goes, the papers go, his,
yeah,
glasses go. And what does this 5'5" guy do? He gets up,
yeah,
runs over, and helps this monster guy up.
That's great.
You know, cleans him up a little bit, picks up his briefcase, gets his papers, sits him down, asks him if he wants a coffee or some water.
Right.
And the guy sits down, and he does. And you know, he walked out with a sale that day, and they've been friends ever since. All because he brought himself down to the other guy's level for a,
yeah,
bit, and,
yeah,
let the other guy help him.
That's right.
Now, that to me is a great positive story.
Yeah, I remember, you know, I make my living in the marketing business. And I had an account years ago, A.Y. McDonald in Iowa. It was a wholesale supply chain. And I was working with a salesman. And there was one salesman who just had trouble getting some orders. Some guys would just get up and, boy, they're out and they're positive and so forth. And I found out that if this guy made a call on a dealer and the dealer had a competitive logo in the window, he wouldn't walk in the door. He thought that the sale was over. he wasn't going to get the sale because the guy had a logo in the door. And we brought in, I don't know if you remember, a guy named Zig Ziglar. He's a motivational speaker. He's popular now, but then he wasn't that popular. He was pretty.
I think I've seen his name in the magazines when I'm on airplane flights.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
He's a sort,
yeah,
of a famous. He's written a number of books, and but then this is back in the late '60s, early '70s. So he wasn't expensive. We brought him in to work with these guys, and he sort of trained this guy to actually work with him in the field. You know, train him to look for competitive logos and walk in the door. In other words, feel the fear and go through it. And that's part of the training. I think in terms of being successful today, I mean, one of the things is to work to keep these organs in our brain, these fear organs and the anxiety organs under control. And the other thing is to feel this fear and then just do it anyway.